accept. I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. Good morning again. So the other morning when we were visiting after Zazen, I said that I was going to give a lecture, Dharma talk on ritual, and I definitely intend to do that. But this morning, I thought I might talk about equanimity. I've been thinking over the last few weeks about how we find, cultivate, and maintain balance in our lives. So I thought today might be a good day to focus on that. I think for many, many of us, the pandemic and the election and in the midst of that, the wildfires and many other things have been a time of ups and downs. And even if in our minds we think we can maintain balance, you know, when things are going well, we think, oh, I got this. I can maintain balance. And then something wallops us and we find ourselves with low energy, or things are going well for a little while and we get peppy, or we get grumpy, or we get sad. And we say, oh, you know, where was that equanimity that I thought was so going to be there for me at all times? I think as humans, this is the way we are. We're complex. We have many, many responses. Physical, emotional, spiritual, relational, every way that you can think of. And some of it is available to us in our conscious minds, and some of it isn't. None of these dimensions are separate. So we have to take the time to devote ourselves to cultivating this steadiness, this balance, whether things are going well or not. And we also need to remember how to refind our balance, how to reconnect with those deep resources, the resources that keep us awake, aware to who we are fundamentally, to remember what's at the root. And when we do that, we can find stability even in our ups and downs. So this stability, this equanimity, is the fourth of what's called the Brahmaviharas, the divine abodes, or sublime states. It's upekkha. The first of these four is metta, or maitri, loving kindness. The second is karuna, or compassion. The third is mudita, sympathetic joy. And the fourth is upekkha, equanimity. So there's various images or models that are used to describe these. One is about a parent towards the child. So usually this is mother, but I'd like to degenderize it. Metta or maitri or loving kindness is the feeling of a parent towards a child. Karuna or compassion is the feeling of a parent towards their sick child, or their child who's having a rough time. Mudita is the parent's joy in their child's successes. And upekkha is like a grandparent, someone who's been around the block a few times, and because of their experience, they have a wider view. They're less caught up in the day-to-day trials and tribulations or joys or ups and downs. They can see things from a broader perspective. So all of these qualities, all four of these Brahmaviharas, are already naturally present in our minds. And we can cultivate them with practice, both formal structured periods of meditation, which is a really fine thing to do. This is not Zazen. This is a different kind of meditation. And if you're interested in it, there are a lot of resources for learning how to do this kind of meditation. And we also cultivate them by simply recalling ourselves to them in our daily lives, to notice when we're challenged in each of these areas or when sympathetic joy just naturally springs up. We can become more and more thoroughly grounded in these states. And when we do, we see the world as it actually is, more and more clearly. We grow in our capacity to respond to internal events and external events more effectively and with more care and more calmness. So we stabilize our minds and hearts and our consciousness by cultivating all four of these. The Pali Canon describes a person mature in these virtues. It says, I'll read you the original, and then I'll read you my slight change. Identifying himself with all, he pervades the entire universe with all-embracing kindness, with compassion, with altruistic joy, with equanimity, with a heart grown wide, deep, boundless, and free from wrath and anger. So, again, in the interest of de-genderizing things, I wrote, identifying themselves, that's all of us, with all, they pervade the entire universe with all-embracing kindness, with compassion, with altruistic joy, with equanimity, with a heart and mind grown wide, deep, boundless, and free from wrath and anger. The heart grown and mind grown wide, deep, and boundless, free from afflictive states, and capable of embracing all, is the heart and mind of equanimity. So equus, which makes sense, equals equal, right? Equal. And animus is mind, soul, spirit. Also courage, which is interesting. This is very close to the meaning of the quality Dogen describes in the Tenzo Kyokun, Daishin. The character for Dai actually means great or vast. Shin, we know, is heart, mind, consciousness. Uchiyama Roshi, Shohaku Okumura's teacher, Uchiyama Roshi, translated this as magnanimous mind. Magna is great, magnanimous, mind and heart. Daishin implies a quality of consciousness that is vast, that is great, that is all-inclusive. It's not something large that kind of like a giant boulder that squishes things that are in the way, cuts them out of the way. It's something that will accept and include everything. It is also not oppressive or stultifying, rigid or life-denying. One of the ways that we can think of inclusivity is kind of like, I don't know if any of you remember the, I think it was the Star Trek series, there was the Borg, and the slogan was, resistance is futile, you know? So you were kind of sucked up into this machine, and all personal identity, all personal narratives, qualities, creativity, all of that was erased in the Borg. This is not equanimity. This is not the kind of inclusiveness that we're talking about. There is no need for resistance, because what we're talking about is the inclusivity that loves diversity, that loves uniqueness, that loves the flowering of our individual practice. One way to think of this is like the ocean. By its very nature, the ocean does not exclude anything. It doesn't exclude anything. Nor is it unbalanced by anything. The ocean is not different from the rivers that flow into it. It is great and stable, even as is dynamic and always changing. Another way we can think of this is as a mountain, settled and stable. But the mountain is never separate from the clouds and the storms that come and go, from the animals, the creatures, the people, the trees that are on it and of it. It's never separate from that. It is made by those things. It's always in dynamic relationship, including everything in its own mountainous. So I'd like to read you a short passage from the Tenzo Kyokan that describes this mind. Magnanimous mind is like a mountain, stable and impartial. Exemplifying the ocean, it is tolerant and views everything from the broadest perspective. Having a magnanimous mind means being without prejudice and refusing to take sides. Do we hear that right now? Being without prejudice and refusing to take sides. Dogen Senji says, when carrying something that weighs an ounce, we do not think of it as light. And likewise, when you have to carry 50 pounds, do not think of it as heavy. Do not get carried away by the sounds of spring, nor become heavy-hearted upon seeing the colors of fall. View the changes of the seasons as a whole, and weigh the relativeness of light and heavy from a broad perspective. It is then that you should write, understand, and study the character for magnanimous. This character for magnanimous is the nature of our heart and mind, is the nature of our life. So there's a very positive sense to this vastness, this stability and inclusivity. And it transforms the life, our life, and the life of others. When we cultivate this, when we remember this, when we recall ourselves back to it, it is a powerful, powerful transformative force. The Pali Canon describes upekkha as an attitude of even-mindedness in the face of every sort of experience: pleasure, pain, fear, distress, joy, desire, all of it, grief. A mind of equanimity is said to be abundant, immeasurable, and without ill will. It is a mind and heart of deep tranquility. So again, this is not throwing a wet blanket over everything and squishing everything down to be even. It is not the Borg. It is not the mind of the Borg. It is the mind of aliveness. It is the mind of being aware and clear with all of it and remembering your ocean-like nature, remembering your stability. You may have ups and downs. We all do. This last couple weeks, for many, many people on every political spectrum, has been one of up and down. How do we, as practitioners of the Dharma Way, come back to that stability that says, I see this, I see the consequences of this, I make a choice, and I am willing to follow through and be stable no matter what? This is tranquility. This is peace. Another meaning of upekkha is to look over. This is kind of like the grandmother's or grandfather's or grandparents' mind, right? So it's often likened to standing on a mountaintop, a place with a broad and wide vision. Or sometimes we can think of it as looking through water that has calmed down, calm and clear. we can see things as they actually are. We are not led around by our emotions. You know, it is so easy to get hooked. I think in Tibetan they call it shempa, hookedness. You know, you get hooked, and before you know it, you're off, down, this way, that way. You know, kind of like a ring in the nose. You know, the nose is very tender. You put a ring in it, and you can pretty much make the whole body go wherever you want. So we want to be unhooked in that way. It does not mean that we don't feel. It means that we have the capacity to feel fully, to think clearly. We have the capacity to see broadly. Another translation of equanimity is Tatra Majihatata. I hope I got that right. Tatra means there. Maja means middle. Tata means to stand or to pose. Tatra means there. Maja means middle. Tata means to stand or to pose. So this is the stand of balance, to remain centered. There is a sense of a strong, flexible, centered muscle, so to speak, from which we can move with ease in any direction, like a dancer. With this sense of stability, we gain confidence. We have confidence. Not a rigid kind of confidence, but a real trust that we won't be thrown by circumstances. Or when we are, we will know how to return to our base. This is the posture in Zazen. When we're sitting Zazen, we rock our bodies right and left, forward and backwards. We find the center pole of our body. We find that center pole, we relax our shoulders, we bring our hands into the mudra, and we sit still. If we have to move, if we're in pain, we move. If we sit in a chair, we sit in a chair. If we can sit in full lotus, great, sit in full lotus. The point is we find that place of balance. It's supple, it's flexible, it's stable. Zenkei Blanche Hartman Roshi once said, "We do not hold still, we find stillness." That, I think, is a spirit of equanimity, and it benefits us and others. It is dignified, inclusive, able to stay still and to respond in a balanced and wise manner. This equanimity, Daishin, is like, I think of like a steady source of warmth and energy. It's often called the engine of the four Brahmaviharas. It's the source. Like the other Brahmaviharas, it has both a near and what's called a near and a far enemy. A far enemy of a Brahmavihara is the polar opposite. So the far enemy of equanimity is aversion, greed, disequilibrium, brought on by liking and disliking, being pulled by liking and disliking. We have liking and disliking, but the point is, are we pulled by it? Approving and disproving, passion and hatred, these destroy the fruitful even-mindedness of truly caring. I think this time we have been through and continue to go through can be deeply destabilizing. It can be hard to find balance when we encounter someone who sees the world very, very differently than we do. To keep our balance when the many things that help us do so, sitting in the Zendo together, sharing our lives together, going to the gym, hanging out with friends, those things may not be available to us, or at least available to us in the same way. And they probably will not be for a while. So it is incumbent upon us to really think about what cultivates equanimity in this time. The near enemy of equanimity is indifference. It's born of dullness, and it is quite different from the rich stability of equanimity. We can see the lure of this, shutting down, limiting our horizons, ignoring what we can do, what we can feel, what we can see. There is time to set boundaries, important, very important, to say, not going to watch endless television or endless feeds on my live stream. Not going to do that. I don't need that. I need to stay awake and I need to cultivate stability. Equanimity is not dull, heartless, or cold. It is not emotionally dry or hollow. It arises from the fullness of understanding, from seeing things deeply and truly, seeing our interconnectedness, which of course gives rise to kindness, compassion, and sympathetic joy. This metta, loving kindness, is often described as the starting point of the development of the Brahmaviharas. But equanimity is the basis for their maturation. Loving kindness, compassion, and sympathetic joy bind us to others. They are the kind of glue that keep us connected. If we focus on them without the leavening action of equanimity, they can become a distorted version of themselves. And they can bind us in an unhealthy way, rather than free us. Loving kindness can become a kind of greedy attachment. It can be narrow and bestowed only on those we think are worthy. Compassion can turn to overwhelm and consuming grief. Sympathetic joy can become a kind of clueless, unbalanced excitement. And then in that, they can swing to their opposite: arrogance, ill will, despair, forceful pushing away, jealousy, or passivity. The relationship of these states is reciprocal. They function as a kind of mutually tempering relationship. It is the ground of wisdom that supports and protects compassion. Loving kindness imbues equanimity with a sense of care that helps you remain calm. Equanimity tempers the endless energy of loving kindness. Compassion keeps equanimity from becoming indifferent to the suffering of others. Equanimity keeps compassion from descending into debilitating sadness and brings to it patience and wisdom and boundaries. Sympathetic joy gives equanimity a good-natured sense of connection, and equanimity supports a balanced sense of joy and appreciation. In all of this, equanimity functions to balance, gives a sense of proportion, it keeps our eye on our root, intention, it guards us from dissipating our energy, from going astray into over-emotionality. All of these other qualities do not last long without equanimity. Alone, they can tend to be subverted by our old habits of mind and dissipate. Rooted in the insight of equanimity as the guiding principle, these other three are supported and they can flourish with other beings. Bhikkhu Bodhi, the great teacher, Theravadan monk, said, "Equanimity is therefore the sublime state that crowns the other three and lets them work in harmony with each other, helps the other three stay on the middle path." So this equanimity, this daishin, is vast and stable, energizing and nourishing. It gives life to the other Brahmi Viharas. It allows us to live freely, to stay connected in a way that's healthy for ourselves and others. It gives us balance, and we can see things more clearly. I highly recommend taking this on as a practice right now. Looking at your life and saying, what gives stability? What does it feel like to be stable? What is my bodily posture when I'm sitting zazen? What does it mean when I'm to be stable and mountain-like and inclusive? When I'm faced with someone who's very different than I am. When I'm disappointed. When I know, for example, that I'm facing Thanksgiving without my family or friends. What is it that provides us with the ability to have this enormously strong, resilient, deep, and wide mind? Think concretely about what you do to support this. Sit zazen. Make offerings. Think about your own mind and heart. Develop this stability. So I'd like to close by reading that section of the Tenzo Kyokun again. I'll read it slowly, so please attend to what this might have to say to you. Magnanimous mind is like a mountain, stable and impartial. Exemplifying the ocean, it is tolerant and views everything from the broadest perspective. Having a magnanimous mind means being without prejudice and refusing to take sides. When carrying something that weighs an ounce, do not think of it as light. And likewise, when you are carrying 50 pounds, do not think of it as heavy. Do not get carried away by the sounds of spring, nor become heavy-hearted upon the colors of fall. View the changes of the seasons as a whole, and weigh the relativeness of light and heavy from a broad perspective. It is then that you should write, understand, and study the character for magnanimous. So let's practice this together. Thank you very much.